It's you and me, baby. Against all odds, we got a good marriage because we serve a greater God. Good marriage.
Hey, babe.
Hey, babe. How's it going?
Doing all right. Glad to be recording when it's still light outside and it's not right before bed. I don't actually feel like I got some life in me.
That's nice. So today we get a chance to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I wish I had Marvin Gaye on cue right now. I could just hit the buttons like, let's get it on. Anyways, we're talking about sex today. If I had a, like, I'm gonna go into my my pastoral bag. If I had to title this conversation, I would title it "Good Marriage, Great Sex."
Amen.
Yeah. So it's a lot of. Before we get into it, I think it's a lot of like misnomers that we tend to come into a marital relationship when it comes to sex in general. And oftentimes within those misnomers and those misconceptions, there are extremes. You know, some extremes are where, you know, you probably think, oh man, sex with one person for the rest of your life, it doesn't sound appealing, especially when you hold it up against what the media portrays, you know, as liberating sex, free sex, fun sex, or whatever you want to call it, you know, and you think of marriage as what they call vanilla sex, just boring or whatever.
Oh man, people call it that?
People call it that.
Oh, awesome.
Man. Mm. And it's such a disservice because it's not at all, you know, that. But that's what some people think. And another extreme, when you're talking about sex and marriage, some people think, oh man, you can just get it in whenever you want. This was the school of thought when I was a Christian coming up around a bunch of married friends.
Also who didn't, Christian, I guess.
Also Christian and single Christian friends. They would say things like this: oh, you get your license, you can put your car on the road. You know what I'm saying? If you catch my meaning. The marriage bed is undefiled if you catch my meaning. You know, and it's like, for me, it started to create this thought of, yeah, when I get married, like, my wife is just going to be acquiescent to she's going to want it whenever I want it. Like, our sex drives are just going to be miraculously in sync. You know? And of course, now we know that that's not true, right? So, what we want to try to do here is dispel some of these outlandish expectations that, you know, some people who may be coming into marriage or may be considering marriage may have, you know, and try to give you some real honest perspective if we can.
Yeah. I mean, we'll try our best. We're not, you know.
Yeah, I don't have no letters behind. Well, I have some letters behind. My
not professionals,
not
I guess.
Not professional.
But we are subject matter experts on our marriage.
Hello.
Yeah. So, and that's worth something.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, where should we begin?
Let's begin at the beginning.
Oh my gosh.
let's begin. No, seriously. Let's begin with.
It's our expectations before we got married.
Yeah.
What we thought sex would be like when we got married.
Do you want to tackle it first?
Yes. I'll try.
Okay.
Surprisingly, I actually was beginning to think the same of that, man, once we like get married, we gonna be all over each other. It's gonna be insane. And that's I think was being basically like driven from the fact that we were like lusting for each other.
Yeah, it was heavy.
Before, like surely before, before getting married, and like we were like, oh man. But then I also felt like there was like some shame with it too. Mm-hmm. And I grew up finding sex like learning that sex was a bad thing, mm-hmm. and that sexuality was something that was like risky to even try to express in general. But like sex itself was like this awful thing that was like a drug that will lead you to make mistakes and fall for the wrong person and cause unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted disease. Like my family, though, especially particularly the women in my family, mm-hmm. made sex sound like it was the worst thing ever, even though I know they all did it. Like, I'm like, what's going on here?
You're like, hypocrites.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what? Why is it so bad? Y'all, you did it. But then I feel like sometimes it was presented with like regrets, maybe. Like, yeah. So maybe they were speaking from their own mistakes and trying their own to protect regrets you from their pain. Yeah, and protecting me from like having to like reroute my life, especially since my family like thought that I was like this golden child. And I was like, you gonna be different. you gonna go to school. And you're going to become a doctor. Like, and you're going to, mm-hmm. like, just stay single for life and you're not be at all distracted, yeah. by the loins of a man.
Those
distracting loins, I tell you. Derailing a girl's just professional path. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what I accepted as truth. Like, as a kid, I was like, all right. All I got to do to be successful is to avoid sex,
yeah.
focus on my studies, and I'll be good. But I wish I had a better view of sex. And I think it's possible to have a healthy view of sex, even as a young person. I think it's possible, but I honestly don't think many adults think it's possible. I think they feel like, no, we need to demonize it, mm-hmm. And make it scary in hopes that you won't be curious.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about it is, like, I think it's very much so cultural, like just here in the States, especially in, you know, in Black families, I guess in any family, but we don't do that with anything else. Like, we don't do it with alcohol. Well, I guess sometimes we do with alcohol. But like, if you got a parent or someone that drinks around you, they don't demonize it like, oh, this is horrible stuff. You know, they just like, this ain't for you, you know?
Right now.
it's not for you right now. When you get older, maybe. But with sex, they, like Bobby Boucher mom, it's the devil, mm-hmm. you know? Like, but nobody ever... Like, at least I never had an instance where they were like, this isn't for you now. And here's why.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I've never got that.
You know, and like.
Like, not.
Yeah.
Like, and at least not in a non-fear.
It was all fear-aggressive.
Way.
Not like, aggressive, but like fear-driven.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know it's hard. I don't envy parents that are trying to like have that talk. And I knew what sex was. Mm-hmm. I was already really enamored with like the human body and physiology and stuff. So my mom knew that she could show me a video straight from like an, you know, educational video on like, mm-hmm. you know, how a baby is created, and that I would understand that. I wouldn't be grossed out by it. Like, I was fascinated by it. And I also recall my mom showing me how to apply a condom too, but I was young, so I'm not quite sure. Like, I guess I'm not quite sure why, because but I think she really was like thinking, I gotta show you this young, because mm-hmm. there's a there the opportunity may present itself and you may take that opportunity, and the least I can do is make sure you know how to put on a condom. And I remember that she demonstrated putting on a condom on a White Diamonds perfume bottle. And I know I'm not the only kid out here who mama had White Diamonds.
That was my mom's
perfume.
By Elizabeth Taylor?
By Elizabeth Taylor.
That was my mom's favorite perfume. That was a jam.
I wonder if my mom even remembers that. I don't even know. But I watched the educational video that was down to the sperm meeting the egg and, you know, ovulation. Because that was speaking my language. Because I loved learning about bodily just like function and things like that. So I was like, what? And it didn't even connect to me like that could happen with my own body one day. Mm-hmm. I could one day like have an egg that meets with sperm and like creates a baby. I was just so enamored that like the body could even do that.
Yeah.
So most people will probably think I was too young to be exposed to all that, but I think it was right on time. I think it was good.
And I think your mom did it right. I've never received any.
But then she fear mongered me the rest of the time.
Right, true. But I think what your mom was trying to do was start you early, and that's what she did. But I think it has to be a type of conversation that grows with the maturity of the child. It has to be something that a conversation that's not just had once, but often,
yeah.
You know, and just growing with the maturity of, you know, like of the child.
Yeah.
And I never received any of that. when I started to get schooled in the arts of sexual education, it was by people who shouldn't have been teaching me. You know, it was by my older brother, who wasn't much. He was a fair amount older than me, but like,
but still a child. Still young.
You know, still young, still impressionable. And that education was like, here's what a stash is. Hey, let's watch this movie. Keep lookout. You know, like it was basically bringing me into the secret so that I wouldn't snitch because like I'm a part of this now.
Yeah. that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
So like I was introduced to it, you know, like pornographic material at a grossly young age. And so by the time I've got to kindergarten, I'm already like looking under girls' dresses, dry humping, all that stuff. And I don't even want to talk about like when I got into middle school, you know, before I took my vial of celibacy going into high school, right?
Yeah.
I was out here. I was wild.
You was wild. Gosh. Don't let that.
I was reckless.
Oh, it's not funny. I'm sorry.
It's not. And I'm not proud of it. You know, and the things that when you're exposed to those things at such an early age, you know, it just opens the door for all kinds of addictions and dysfunctions, you know. And, you know, so that's pretty much my origin of how, like, I started to, like, explore my sexuality, you know. And as a Black man, you know, that stuff isn't like, it isn't abhorred like it is abhorred, like abhorred, abhorred,
abhorred.
It isn't demonized.
Abhorred. No, I like abhorred.
It isn't abhorred like it is for young Black girls. It isn't demonized like it is for young Black girls. It's praised for young Black men. Mm-hmm. It's a mark of manhood. It's like, oh man, you slaying them. You doing your thing, and we get praised for it. You know, and it's like a rite of passage, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's not just for Black men, but like it's heavy in the Black community, you know, being praised for being a player or someone who is promiscuous with women.
Yeah, hypersexualized. Heck,
like, yeah, just hypersexualized. And then it's reinforced by TV and media. Like it's reinforced by the music that we listen to.
Yeah.
Right. So by the time we get to the person we say we love, what, like, we're objectifying even that person, because like we've had all this indoctrination of objectifying women sexually, mm-hmm. you know, and not being the protectors that we're supposed to be, not being thoughtful communicators like we're supposed to be, not honoring and respecting the person we say we love if we want to spend the rest of our lives with. So we have to like learn all those things. It's only natural, well, not natural, it's unnatural, but it sets you up on a trajectory so that when you enter into a marital relationship and you start to begin to want to explore your partner's sexuality, you already have all this baggage on, and yeah. you're set up to have some really rough parts in your marriage early on.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. Like, yeah, we do just come in with baggage, and I think that's the case for a lot of people, regardless of like their walk. Some people are coming into marriage as virgins. Some people mm-hmm. are coming in previously married. Like, some people are coming in with, you know, porn addiction, mm-hmm. or are with like learned behavior, basically. Have had all these years to develop these learned behaviors, mm-hmm. And these beliefs and these expectations. And then we get into marriage and we like, okay, time to see it, my expectations put into action. And I didn't want to, well, Ashley, since we started from the beginning, so now we can start with marriage.
Yeah.
So we get married. Actually, you know what? Even before getting married, let's just say, like, I just want to quick, like, make a little interlude moment mm-hmm. of our few months before marriage.
Yeah.
Just like,
let's just, it's the elephant in the room. Let's address
it's not,
it.
No, nah, it is what it is. Like, but the few months, and we talked about this during, like the How Married Are You, like,
book club,
like, with Yvette and Glenn's book club, mm-hmm. I almost forgot how freaking ridiculous that season of life was, like, for the few months before we got married. Like,
we couldn't keep our hands off each other.
Yeah, like, it's like something just switched on, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, it was very difficult to be around each other and not, like, completely abandon our intentions mm-hmm. of saving marriage, like sets for marriage, and mm-hmm. and at that point we both had been celibate for quite some time, mm-hmm. and we're doing, well, I don't know, I don't assume we were doing that, we were both doing fine with it, but I personally was doing fine with it because mm-hmm. I don't really get desire, really,
in that regard,
yeah. in that type of way, like, so, like, celibacy wasn't something that was difficult for me. But I learned, like, that I thought that this was just, like, some, you know, from anointing from the Lord. You know, the Lord was just doing me a solid. Like, you know what? I'm just going to just, like, do you a solid and just, like, not give you any sexual desire.
Off.
And that wasn't what it is. Like, I just, like, didn't have a person whom I felt that deeply connected to. Not even my previous marriage, to be honest. I didn't have someone who I was that deeply connected to. I also think, like, my hormones also just were, like, also were changing on me, like, too. Like, but still, that even with that, for the first time in my life, I was, like, horny and wanted to, like, have sex. And I was caught completely off guard because celibacy came easy. I was just like, oh, psh, not a strong cold I got to worry about. I'm good. Like, I ain't got to worry about that with me. Like, and talk about being like, you know, prideful about it. Like, I you know, obviously that's not everybody's intention. Not everybody cares to be celibate. Not everybody cares to wait till marriage to have sex with their partner. Not everybody even, you know, has like, and some people have just, you know, different experiences when it comes to desire. Some people are, you know, are asexual, you know, demisexual. Like, it's just a lot of, this is a lot of variety of people's experiences. So we're only speaking from our own experience. Like, but yes, I was caught really off guard. And I wasn't comfortable with like completely abandoning our intention to wait till marriage. And what seemed like a very simple decision all of a sudden became difficult and became very confusing. And I was uncomfortable also with that, confusion too. But I just distinctly, you know, remember that we really both set ourselves up for failure. But not all of it was our doing, of course, but like some of it was, you know, your love language is physical touch and quality time. So I didn't feel comfortable saying, don't touch me and we got to spend less time together. Knowing that it would probably make you feel less loved and less cared for and make you feel like, you know, it's a threat to our relationship, whatever. We didn't have, you know, friends comfortable to hold us accountable, even though we were helping friends hold themselves accountable, like over the months and, you know, in years. But like when it came down to us, we didn't have anybody really that would like say, hey, these were your intentions. Are those still your intentions? Is that really, are you abandoning your intentions for good reason, for bad reason? Nothing.
I didn't have anybody calling me.
Nobody like checking in.
9 p.m. or whatever. Like, hey man, what you doing?
And we put our relationship on an island. And even
which is why we didn't get.
Which is why we didn't get any help. Like, we barely told people that we were in a relationship. Yeah. Like,
they didn't find out until we were engaged that we were in a relationship.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't find out until we were engaged. And though I, you know, there was a lot of good reasons for doing that. That was one drawback is that when we actually were having trouble sticking with what we knew ultimately what we wanted, we didn't have anybody. And I remember reaching out to, you know, we were doing premarital counseling.
Yeah.
And I remember at one point reaching out to like our counselor, like, help.
Yeah.
Help us. What do we do? This is not something we expected. And, you know, we kind of got like given like, read this book. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I need more than a book right now.
We need intervention.
Like, we need intervention. for real.
Help me, I can't help myself. Help me, I can't help myself. Help me, I can't.
Yeah, so. No, help me, just during that time, I remember that when we finally did get help, it was like really close to us getting married, and like we started
from like a couple.
I was like, "Yo, sun go down. We can't make these kind of jokes,
right?
Sun go down.
Yeah, because like, we used to do like that's what she said. Yeah, jokes all the time with no problem. And then that became inappropriate.
It's like, yeah, that is what she said.
That is what she said.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I'm gonna say. Like everything just got so bad. I also remember checking in with my friend Jennifer, which I like freaking just love her, and I'm just so thankful for like the friends that I have. Like I had single friends who were like you know, you kind of gauge it. Some single friends can like can still provide like some really like insightful guidance simply because they know you very well.
Yeah.
You know, and you might have some single friends that, you know, that just, you know, can't relate or even friends who like can't get past the fact that you're trying to implement a Christian principle and they're just like, why are you even bothering with that? And like, she's just like, is so thoughtful that she, it doesn't have to be something that she values per se. It's like she, but she loves me and knows what that my, I take my values seriously. So for me to like suddenly like struggle and like derail from that value, she was still able to be insightful and be like, well, what do you want? Cause I know that this is what you wanted. Mm-hmm. I know that you wanted to wait till marriage. Mm-hmm. So this does, don't think that you have to just like say F it. Don't feel like you got to just like throw it in the air unless that's what you truly want to do. Like you also have a right to change your mind too, but like think about what you really want and then decide how to move forward. And that was like really helpful. And in between, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be saying names. But that's fine. Yeah, I don't think she would mind that.
Yeah, you can drop a last name.
But not to mention that I got multiple friends named Jennifer.
Yeah, it could be anybody.
Oh, like, something could be anybody. Whatever.
But you know,
and then
who
we
are.
Also had like had friends who we did finally say, oh, that's a couple that we can reach out to that we love and we trust.
Right.
Who knows our values? Who knows what we want
another Jennifer
who
by
has
the way.
Struggled another Jennifer like
Jennifer's who, are just good people,
they just good people, just good I tell people. You they just solid individuals. I have several Jennifers in my life and they are all solid.
Yeah, I'm sold on the fact that Jennifers are just good people. They're like good if I people. Meet any Jennifer, it can it can be apocalypse and I'm in dire straits, I'm like, oh, thank you, what's your name it's Jennifer. I know I'll be taken care of.
I know I'll be good.
You know?
I know I'll be taken care of. I just know I'll be good. I'll be like, are you in the hospital? And be like, nurse, what's your name? Jennifer. I feel good about this.
I feel better already.
I'm feeling better. But that was, that also was really, it was really what we needed. And I wish that we didn't get to that point of this reactive, confusing, you know, crazy place that almost had us like questioning our relationship. I was like,
it had us questioning everything.
Faith. It had us questioning God's will. It had us questioning like on our lives and it had us
rationalizing our wrongness. We were like, well, you know, like they didn't have the institution of marriage back in the day. And, you know, when you sleep together, technically, you're married. So, and we're going to get married, right? It was tomfoolery.
It was tomfoolery.
When I talk about, though, like, the grace of God, though, even in the middle of all that, you know, and us, you know, diverging from our original plan and having sex before marriage and, you know, and the shame that came with that. I thought it was going to take away something from our marital night, like our honeymoon. I thought that like it was going to like we were missing something and then like we'll never be able to like experience, you know, but with the grace of God, man, it was like on our honeymoon, I remember feeling like such an overwhelming joy. Like, this is legal. This is right. This is good, you know, and just smiling. Like, we'll see each other naked and be like, this is good. You know, like, this isn't, I don't have to be secretive anymore. Like, this is good.
Or feel like doubtful or shameful or, you know, or just feel like you abandoned what was important to you.
Right.
Or like that was good, like for sure. With no doubt.
Yeah. But it was work and it is work. You know, so if anybody's listening out there, you're engaged and you may have, you know, probably slept with your significant other, you know, and you're feeling like really, really like, oh man, we blew it, might as well just call it off. Don't call it off. You know, get back on, like, just keep trying. Recommit yourselves to the commitment that you made and get married. If it's the right thing to do, get married. And work for it, because marriage is hard, man. It's beautiful, but it's hard.
And we were working, I mean, and that was before even getting married, us trying to work on our marriage. Like, you know, in doing the pre-work at least, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay. So
that and get was some that. Accountability.
Oh, get some accountability. Please. Like, build in the accountability before the struggle. Because we failed.
We thought we were too strong.
Because we thought we were good. Like, mm-hmm. And I promise you, we were good mm-hmm. and then until we weren't.
Yeah.
We were good until we weren't. So, at the end of the day, that was pride. Mm-hmm. Thinking that we just was, like, impermeable to, like, this being a problem. And it complicated things. For it sure. really complicated things. And, sure. and like we said, like it had us questioning, like, you know, it had us questioning faith. It had us questioning like scripture. It had us questioning our bodies. It had us questioning our desires. I even for a moment was even questioning, like, maybe I'm not supposed to get married to this person because I feel like they're having me fall into temptation. Mm-hmm. Like they're willingly allowing, you know, this to happen. Is that what I have to look forward to in the future? Are they just going to be okay with me, like, abandoning, like, my moral, like, beliefs and things mm-hmm. like that? So, it can really...
Yeah, I remember we started having, fracture. Like, crazy dreams around yeah. that time.
Yeah,
like, really, really bizarre dreams.
It can confuse, you yeah. know, really can fracture things. And I even after getting married, though now marriage, like, we felt like, okay, we are doing this the way that we intend now, it still took some healing time. There was mm-hmm. still some shame, not just because of, like, our struggles sexually before marriage, but even just, like, we allowed, like, we allowed that weird lust and crazy season to distract us from doing the work that yeah. we needed to do to be ready for marriage. Like, you know, definitely you were dealing with, like, pornography mm-hmm. and, like, growing up with it so young and being exposed mm-hmm. to it so young, and it facilitating just a really hypersexualized mindset. Yeah. I was dealing with, like, the demonization of sex, and both of them were just honestly equally unhealthy views mm-hmm. of sex, and
then trying to find that middle ground of yeah, where it's good.
Yeah, and we were doing good work in that area, and then derailed it by introducing, like, lust and sex to the relationship. Yeah. Like, some relationships, you know, some relationships, they don't, you know, that's not a concern of theirs. But for us, since we had, like, traumas and a lot of things around sets to work on, mm-hmm. it wasn't good for us mm-hmm. like to like have our relationship get complicated by sets. So you know, it meant then that it derailed our efforts, and because we mm-hmm. were doing good work in that area, like, we were, you know, I was learning things about myself that I never was challenged to think about, like, mm-hmm. And I would have much preferred to have focused those few months before our marriage on continuing to work on that, mm-hmm. you know, that area, you know, before we got married. But obviously it turned out fine. Mm-hmm. we did that work during marriage, but I think it made it, and, you know, a little bit more challenging, but we were committed to helping each other work through those challenges. And
yeah, I think one thing that we did that has paid dividends in, like, just gold, is communication, like, being just a key element and component to the foundations of our marriage, right? Like, so when things was bad, you know, or when things are rough, or when they get rough and bad, like, we always kind of fall back on communication, clear communication, constant communication, patient communication, loving communication, respectful communication, you know, and it rescues us, man, you know, because so much of marital mm-hmm. problems, you know, stem off of a lack of proper communication, you know?
Yeah.
And one person feels like they're not being heard. One person, like, oh, one person is just prideful and may not be listening, or feel like the other person deserves an audience, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you love your spouse, if you respect your spouse, Do the work in communication, because it'll pay back. It definitely pays back.
One of the best things that we did is that we like talked through our expectations of what we expected. What were our set expectations basically in marriage, and which is how we started, I guess, this conversation.
Full circle. Like, look at that.
But I
do feel like, I'm sorry to cut you off. I do feel
you
like
sorry.
A little bit. I do feel like in marriage, like you revisit things. You know, you revisit those expectations. What have changed? What has changed, and what are some things that are the same? You know, and hopefully, you know, you're changing and you're growing, and you know, and the things that need to change, hopefully those things are changing. The things that should stay constant and the same, hopefully those things are staying constant.
Yeah.
So.
But, yes. So, sets is a great thing now. Mm-hmm. And I'm still working through, like, some of my challenges of just, like, viewing sets as being something that can... Like, I no longer consider it to be... a bad thing, for sure.
It's not the devil.
Yeah, like, it's not this like drug that's going to turn me into some crazy
sex
person.
Some crazy sex demon
that's going to like make me make bad mistakes, like sleep with raggedy trifling dudes and and like our women, whatever, and like. Turn me, you know, make me, you know, derail my like dreams and aspirations. Like that's literally how sets was formed with me. That it would like ruin your life.
The distiller of hopes and dreams.
Yeah. So I obviously no longer think that, and I've enjoyed growing sexually in marriage, in the context of marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also just like. I think it's also awesome to know that you can be, I mean, I'm 38 years old, like, and I'm sitting here, you know, learning and growing sexually in marriage. I think some people feel like that's something that only happens in your early 20s, like that you discover, you know, who you are, or even more so, you know, sexually and when you're young. But I, you know, definitely want people to know that, like, honestly, it doesn't. It's regardless of age, because you can be an expert on your own body, and kudos to you if you really do know. You know what you like. You know what you don't like. Like you're confident. You're able to provide your partner with clear direction, like and you know, positive reinforcement when they're doing things right, and loving correction when they're doing things not so right. But. You're at the end of the day, though, once you're with a partner, you're brand new to that partner, and you're, it's just a beautiful thing to make the choice to indefinitely invest your time and energy into exploring that partner's sexuality and exploring what it means when you two are becoming one sexually and what that looks like. And I mean, it doesn't help too that society kind of thinks sex has to be the spontaneous, just like super
crazy.
erotic thing. And that's fine, you know. So for some people, that's just how it is sometimes.
It's not sustainable.
And that's okay.
Like, it doesn't age with you. Like you're gonna get old.
Eventually. You know?
Like some of those things, man.
But
like,
you know, grandmamas can and grandpapas can still get it in when they, you know.
No, they can still get it in, but like not the way they did when they was in their 20s.
I still am working on trying to understand why you would want sex during some particular moments. Like to me, I think I want, you know, I'm like, okay,
it just
I had a
out.
Good day. I feel well rested. I hydrated today. Brandon was speaking my love language like throughout the day. Like, man, we should totally make love tonight.
This right here is a penny dropper.
I still am working on trying to understand why you would want sex during some particular moments. Like to me, I think I want, you know, I'm like, okay, I had a good day. I feel well rested. Mm-hmm. I hydrated today. Brandon was speaking my love language like throughout the day. Like, man, we should totally make love tonight.
This right here is a penny dropper.
I'm like, this would be great. I just want to end the day as close as possible with my husband. And like, and then there's other days when I'm like, this day was awful. Like, Brandon wasn't listening to me. Like, I asked him to do something. He didn't do it. Yeah. Like, I'm not feeling sexual at all. I'm feeling ugly and unattractive. And I'm like, I can't wait to go to sleep. Yeah. I got to get up early. And he'd be like, yeah. I'm gonna shoot my shot. And I'd be like, are you serious? Hey, like,
you miss 100% of the shots you don't put up.
I'm past feeling like you have to be in the mood. I will say that. I think that's a misunderstanding too, is that like,
don't have to be in a mood.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't have to wait for a mood, because to be honest, my makeup isn't. I don't get moods per se. Like, that's just not my. That's not my makeup. The mood happens in the moment. It happens when it happens, and some, while other people, they in the mood all dang day. Like, they've been percolating, you know, all day.
I percolate all day.
You percolate all day. And you be like, slow build. Yeah. And like, while other people, like, I can't wait for the move. I was truly waiting for the mood. It'll happen eventually, but
a leap year. It was a leap year.
I'm like, but that's okay. Yeah. I'm like, I'm learning for me, that's okay. And that's for other people. And, you know, other people had to, they had to discover what's okay for them too. But, you know, I don't just say, oh goodness, let me have sex with my husband to ensure, to solidify our relationship.
Right.
Like, it's not like that.
It's understanding.
But it's just
like,
knowing that,
yeah. like for myself, like I just run hot. You know, I'm always ready. Like, we could be beefing or not. Like, I'm just ready to go. And I know that.
I mean, you could have just pissed me off, and you could and you'd be like.
And then for my reason, sometimes like it just comes out like, let's make love, you know. But sometimes I just want to be close.
Yeah.
And like, some, I just don't have the language all the time.
But like, have sense.
Yeah, I'm a shot shooter now.
You gonna shoot
your
shot?
I'm a shot shooter.
I'm about shooting that shot. Pew, pew.
Shooting from the hip. You know, so.
I'm okay, because
that's my love language.
And yeah, like when, I have to respect that too. That like that physical touch, including sets and closeness.
and including when we have just had an argument, because I want to reassure you that like I'm not holding on to this anger. Yeah,
and that I love you, and let me show it to you.
Let me show you. Let me show and tell, girl.
Show it to you that you know we might be beefing, but. Ain't nothing changed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Which I appreciate that. That's not my love language, but I respect your love language. And I enjoy like sharing that love language with, you know, with you, and showing you how that I love you through your love language, you know, too. So
yeah.
But yeah, that always cracks like confuses me. And then, but at this point it also cracks me up, because I can pretty much expect it.
One thing that was a surprise to me early on, about myself, is that like, even like after very emotional conversations, like I'm ready to go. Like, this, I could be crying, snotting, like, I don't even know, baby. Like, the economy's down, and then I don't even know. Let's go into bed. You know, I don't know.
And I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Like, when it just highlights how different we are as people, and how we can still be compatible. And it's just like, I just appreciate God's like comedic approach to showing showing me that.
And, so, and like, what's crazy, like, remember when we were leading like our marriage group, like small group, And what we discover is that, like, in so many relationships, there are opposites, like extremes, mm-hmm. you know?
And like, what attracts them to each other? Like, yeah. I just think there's a reason for that, that very like, and different like
sexually,
people,
right? Like, it's like, just,
are, yeah, attracted. Some including people, like, sexually.
I can, yeah, yeah, like, I can have sex every single day with this person. And the other person is like, I don't know about every single day, like, mm-hmm. once in a while, you know? Yeah. But more times than not, those are the married couples that are like in the room.
Yeah.
You know, and it just goes back to having patience and understanding, you know, and communicating your expectations, communicating your history with sex, you know, and some of the things that you're working through. Like, for some couples, man, you guys may have legit trauma. You know, and you, mm-hmm. those things have to be addressed. They have to be unpacked, you know, early and often, because if not, it's going to be damaging.
Yep. I felt like it was for me. Mm-hmm. I had to really work through like some things through counseling, through some self-reflection, because I certainly was just like burying that. I kind of thought if I just put those emotions in a trunk and like in my mind and throw it into my ocean that's in my mind, that is, it'll be gone forever. But ain't nothing like marriage to cause things to come up the shore.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All the
it's
things.
It's a mirror. It's a mirror.
All the
man.
Things. And man, it was revealing like my, you know, dysfunctional ways that I've processed like sex and relationships, desire, like even like attractiveness. Like I'm sometimes like, I used to get remarkably uncomfortable when you'd be like, damn girl, you looking sexy as hell. Like,
darn.
And if it's
darn girl.
Yes. I said dang.
Oh, it sounds like dang.
Dang. No. Dang girl. Like, and I'm like, why do I feel objectified? This is my husband.
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
This is my husband. And I had to really like unpack that with myself and be like, because I am absolutely conditioned to being objectified when I'm hearing things like that. And that doesn't go away
yeah.
with suddenly, and you're talking to somebody like getting married.
And I don't know if I ever shared this with you, but I was always against catcalling. I never catcalled a girl in my life because, number one, it don't work.
Never does.
It's a waste of time.
I appreciate that we have listeners who actually do be thinking about what we drinking, because we always yeah. say what we're drinking,
like in the description.
In the description, but you don't think, you know. I'd be like, man, nobody probably reading this description. But we had one review that was like, y'all need bigger cups.
Yeah,
because like we only record this conversation until our drinks run out, and that's yeah. how we gauge. Like, all right, you know, well, it's probably mm-hmm. time to wrap it up. I don't think people talk about sex enough.
We got to demystify it.
Yeah. Like, it's not, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's not a to mention that thing it's valid. Like people could really use the validation mm-hmm. of their sexual experiences. Cause you know, we often are just keeping it to ourselves. And, or you think about people like us who were in a relationship, mm-hmm. were celibate, you know, intentionally, like before we got together and throughout like our relationship, I deeply wish that, I already made clear. I feel like that was a failure on our part to not be more intentional about having, you know, well-established couples close yeah. enough to us and within our circles to be our accountability, to be our mm-hmm. support, to be, to speak life into us when we're having doubts and confusion.
Yeah.
And I don't want any relationship to feel like they got to figure this issue out on their own.
Yeah.
It's so unfair. And it's such a like fragile time, like right before you're getting married. It's already confusing. You're already trying to plan a wedding, and that's already adding stress to a relationship.
Open, honest communication can cover so much ground
in a short period of time
than just being in proximity with somebody, yeah. dating. for years.
Yep. I didn't realize that was even possible. Like, mm-hmm. I thought you had to date for at least 2 years
right.
before you even start talking about marriage. Like, I'm previously married. I did that, and obviously it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. I still didn't know my ex-husband. I still really didn't get to know him until I really saw him in some dark times and mm-hmm. and him really truly revealing his true self. And then revealing a lack of desire to want to improve himself mm-hmm. in those like dark areas. And that same thing with myself. Like, I realized that I've been dating this person for years, but I haven't truly done any work to mm-hmm. like to establish myself as someone that can manage a long-term relationship with someone and trusting. I had zero trust. How do you have a relationship with zero trust? How do you have a relationship with like zero transparency? Like, it was ridiculous to mm-hmm. even think that all we had to do was be together long enough.
Right.
And that was sufficient. It was poppycock. Poppycock. You don't hear that word too often.
No, you don't. Go for this full steam ahead. Because like full I've steam ahead, never man. In any relationship that I've ever been in felt like I could be 100% my authentic self.
Yep.
I always sent out the representative. I always sent out that person who was a version of me, but like just a little bit cool, mm-hmm. just tweaked, yeah. just tweaked a little bit to someone that I thought that yeah. you were like looking for.
Now I feel like we were being our full true selves.
100.
And we weren't scared off by it.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely peculiar. Mm-hmm. I still think it's the exception. To the to the norm, but like
it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, and I feel like it doesn't have to be. I think if two people are really willing to be fully transparent and raw and open, I was more open with you than I was with myself.
Well,
like I went years denying my problem areas.
It's discovery because like, it's like it's certain things that you don't even realize. Is a problem area until yeah. you're faced with something,
yeah.
you know, and then it comes up and it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, and then you do the work of exploring where it came from.
And I'm now that we've had six, almost 7 years into this and with us having, you know, a pretty tough year last year, mm-hmm. what was missing was that open communication.
Yeah.
Like our tough time was when we started closing the door on the very thing mm-hmm. that forced us together so powerfully, yeah. you know.
But look, we appreciate you. We value you. We value your thoughts. We read our comments. And yeah, man, we'll see y'all on the next podcast. DMs.
Yeah, we read our DMs, like on a Good Marriage podcast on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So hit us up.
Please.
Follow us.
Please.
We appreciate it.
Please.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Yes. It's you and me, baby. Against yes, all odds, we got a good marriage because we serve a greater God.
Why?
Good marriage.